we go. Hey everyone, welcome you all to Drive Through HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. Well, this is a new year and we are so excited to talk to each and every guest that we have at Drive Through HR. And today especially I'm talking with William. Hey William, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
But I'm so excited because this is the first show that after I'm doing after my 1 month of vacation. So I'm pretty excited. Without further ado, let's talk to our guest, Peggy Carter-Barr, the head of content at exporthr.com. Hey, Peggy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, wonderful. Well, Peggy, to our guest, if you can talk a little bit about yourself, that would be fantastic.
Sure. I have been in HR publishing for about 20 years. I was formerly the editor-in-chief at Business and Legal Resources, and I helped start up the Expert HR service 3 years ago. And as part of both of those ventures, I've been involved with HR benchmarking and HR employment law compliance at the federal and state level. So legal publishing and really understanding trends and the legal developments affecting HR professionals. I've enjoyed going to the HR Tech Conference and SHRM conferences and just helping support HR professionals with these challenges that they have.
Well, we're huge fans of Expert HR. If you don't mind, tell the audience a little bit about Expert HR. Just kind of give us the overview of why y'all started it up, what it does, how it fits into the larger tapestry in the market, so that we can set some context to the rest of our discussion.
Sure, that sounds great. So ExpertHR.com, as I mentioned, we developed it in the last 3 years, and it's an offshoot of our, in the UK, we have an Expert HR product that's been around for 12 years, and it's the market leader in the UK. And the objective of the site is in one place to help HR professionals understand and keep tabs on legal developments across federal, state, and local jurisdictions related to anything relating to employment law that they're going to need to deal with in terms of the compliance and managing the employees. Our UK site also does a lot of benchmarking, and that's an area that we're developing on our end, and what we're talking about today is our first benchmark report that we developed in conjunction with our benchmarking team in the UK. And so we've employed sort of the latest technology to make the site as current. It's basically the most current site out there for keeping track of all the legal developments across all these jurisdictions on all employment law topics. We've got workflow tools and a staff of attorney editors who keep track of all these developments. Several of them have actually been speakers or interviewed on the Drive Through HR. So their job is to keep tabs on developments and turn it into plain English for HR professionals so that they can ensure that they're in compliance with the myriad of developments that are continually occurring.
Nice. Well, let's ask the question of what keeps you up at night twofold. So, like, what's keeping you up at night? I think there's great content there, but also what's keeping your readers up at night?
So I would have to say that the trends in new legislation at the state and municipal level is really quite a challenge that we're seeing. I mean, in fact, and many of them are quite far-reaching. There were over 48 new laws across states and municipalities that just came into effect January 1st. A lot of them addressed issues that aren't even mandated at the federal level, so they're very unique to the state level, and some of them are real bellwethers for broader trends across the country. Some of these are medical marijuana, social media, flexible work arrangements, LGBT issues, paid sick leave, and I could go on and on. There's a lot coming through at the state and municipal level. And it's a real challenge for multi-state employers and as well as single-state employers, just keeping tabs on these and then applying those developments into their day-to-day operations. I think the other thing, so generally speaking, I think that keeps me up at night thinking about HR and the challenges that they have. But I think the other area is the Affordable Care Act and just the significant operational changes that that's causing for HR and sort of the long-term strategic changes and tactical changes that HR needs to employ to ensure that they're in compliance and on top of kind of how it's affecting their workforce.
Well, I want to ask you the question about what do you think we're going to be blindsided by in 2014 from an employment law perspective, but it might be easier to consume is what do you think are going to be some of the big themes that we'll see over the course of this year?
I would have to say employee leaves continues to be an area where there's some interesting trends. I mentioned paid sick leave, which has been adopted in a few municipalities, and but there's other types of paid leave that are it's a real evolving area. Parental leave and things like that are making things just very challenging for HR to manage these. So the various types of leaves and, of course, how they all interplay is a layer on top of that. But I think that's a real challenging area looking forward this year. I think I would also say enforcement trends are up, and I think they will continue to be up. And I think employers need to be aware and make sure that they've kind of got all their ducks in order in terms of staying on top of all of these laws. And then I think I would say as well, we published an LGBT report a few months ago, and that's really an evolving area as well in terms of being an employer of choice, and then the various, like a lot of states and localities or municipalities are adopting various discrimination, like classes of discrimination where LGBT, transgender, and so forth are increasingly protected classes. And so that has sort of wide-reaching implications in terms of recruitment, in terms of hiring, in terms of benefits, so forth. But I think those would be the main ones that I think are going to be quite a challenge to kind of get for HR to sort of stay on top of these developments and then make sure they're in compliance and with them.
You know, I'm kind of tired of the intersection points of social and HR, but then again, I've been talking about it for almost a decade, so of course I'm tired of it. But what do you see? What from your readership, the intersection points between, I just read an article today about Facebook passwords and employers asking for Facebook passwords again today. Like, aren't we done with this? Evidently not. So what do you see?
Well, I think it's one of those, it's sort of a love-hate relationship because on the one hand, and some employers are seeing it as an opportunity to embrace and use it for recruiting and kind of creating your brand. On, I just had an article not too long ago about Pinterest pages and employers creating their brand. So there's a lot of positives that you can use for on the social media front. But there's clearly a lot of risks, and I think we certainly haven't heard the end of it. And with the NLRB, the sort of activist role they've been taking there have made it quite challenging in terms of what employers can and can't do with respect to social media. And as you mentioned, there's also these trends where there are state laws prohibiting asking for those passwords. But I think it's certainly not going away. It's changing so fast, and there's new tools being and Snapchat and all these new things that are being released almost every other day. I think employers really need to be very clear about what they find acceptable and what their guidelines are. And but also, I think not run away screaming, because there's a lot of opportunity to use it to their advantage. So there's risks, but there's a lot of pluses as well.
I want to get your take on organized labor and some of the things that you've seen over the, the last couple of years, and even so far as the micro units and how they're creating kind of smaller kind of groups of people to then make a vote. What are the trends that you're seeing in organized labor?
Well, that's not a forte of mine, so I wouldn't be able to go into too much detail, but I think what I would say is, we have certainly continued to see the trend where there's really the niche organized labor, where it's addressing either where employers have not worked to be an employer of choice. So I do think that that's always important for employers not to be complacent, because organized labor can arise when working conditions are not strong. In terms of the micro, I don't really feel I can comment on that. I don't have much experience with that.
No worries. I was just going to, from a trends perspective, let me ask you about your latest benchmark report.
Yeah.
So, I've done a lot of these benchmark reports, and you start off with some assumptions, you put it out there, you get the data comes back, and I've always been shocked every time I've done one of these things. If something that I thought was going to happen didn't happen, or the opposite, right? So when you look back at the benchmark report, what's something that's kind of surprising to you?
I think one of the things that I found fascinating from the results had to do with the HR effectiveness aspect of the survey. So some of the questions we asked related to how effective is your HR department, and quite a few organizations don't even track or measure their effectiveness, but those that do, we were able to analyze the data to look at which organizations are more effective versus less effective. In other words, how well are they doing what is expected of them? And one of the things I thought was really fascinating, comparing the effective HR departments versus the not effective HR departments, was that there was no correlation to the size of the company. There was no correlation to the sector. So in other words, you can have an effective organization, HR department, whether it's a large, medium, or small employer, or whether it's public sector, private sector, manufacturing. But the things that did vary were pretty significant, and it was really quite interesting. It did not, in fact, the more effective HR departments, they had surprisingly, a lower ratio of HR staff to employees. So in other words, it's not just a matter of hiring more HR people to be more effective. In fact, there were lower numbers of HR people to employees in the highly effective HR departments. But what was different was that the effective HR departments had more budget, and they paid their HR professionals more. It could well be because they were more senior professionals. But be that as it may, they did spend more money, even though they hired less people, if you see what I'm saying. The other differences were that the effective HR departments, they took more ownership over the responsibilities of people management. Several of the companies that we surveyed were trying to push down the people management aspects, EEO, sometimes hiring, performance management, to supervisors, but in the highly effective HR departments, they tended to keep more control over those issues. They were also more likely to have a written strategy, which is sort of no surprise, but so they tended to be more focused. They had their HR department had more focused specialisms, so you might have a training person who's responsible for training or diversity or some specialty that helped them focus on what was important for them and their priorities. And they were also much more diligent about measuring the effectiveness using a number of tools. I mean, we had a list of about 13 different ways of measuring the effectiveness, and they basically used all of them. And so it was clearly a priority. These results were really quite interesting, and I just thought it was fascinating that it really didn't have anything to do with the size of the company or the sector. And it didn't mean just hiring more people. It was really about organizationally how you were structured and what your focus was and the kind of systems you put in place to drive that effectiveness.
Well, this is really interesting insight that you have just shared right now. And I remember reading some of your studies that I don't know the source of that particular study, which says that HR department has limited involvement in budgeting procedures. And that is one particular skill that HR department has to improve on, something like that. So I wanted to ask you this question. When you've gone through this particular study, have you seen that HR department who are, you know, not that effective, what are some skill sets that they are missing?
We did not specifically ask about what skill sets they're missing, but we did ask several questions about their budgets, and both the budgets for operations, like their staffing, as well as their HR activities. And it was quite surprising that there was I'm just pulling up the exact figures, but there were always a about a roughly, let's see, there was about 30 to 40% that didn't even have a budget. They were basically part of other budgets. So I think, you know, if they don't have a budget, they haven't been required to develop at least an operational type of budget. So I think that is certainly something that we've heard anecdotally and through other surveys. And we will be conducting additional benchmark surveys moving forward, and I think that's an area that we can make sure that we include to sort of see the types of skills that are, perhaps need to be further developed within the profession.
That's great. Well, your research has gone through a lot of employers that are mid-size and a huge organization, a larger organization as well. But for a startup, those who are listening from a startup organization, and while they are doing their budgeting or whatever you say in terms of operating cost budget, when it comes to that initial level of HR department, what are some points that you would say to them that should be considered in that initial stage?
Yeah, so startups, clearly that's, and I've worked at startups myself, and it's people management. You know, you've got to hire the right people, and when a startup, you can have just a few employees, you can grow fast. A lot of these employment laws apply to employers with as few as 1 or 10 employees, and yet a lot of times you don't have the luxury of having an HR professional. One of the things that our data does show is that because we We look at our data for 1 to 250 employees. We can and 250 to 1,000, and then 1,000 plus. And so we look at sort of the metrics and the benchmarks based on size. And the smaller companies tend to be less efficient with their HR. I think that's partially understandable because larger companies invest more in employee self-service and various, you know, ways of doing things efficiently. With respect to startups, I think the key is hiring the right people, and then having the tools to know what your requirements are, so that you can be in compliance in the most efficient, cost-effective manner. Because there are a lot of kind of landmines out there for any employer, and particularly smaller employers who may not be as familiar with a lot of the requirements. And there's a lot of tools out there to help with sort of, if you're a smaller employer, what are the types of the laws, what types of things do you have to make sure you have in place for your employees, what types of questions can you ask and not ask when you're interviewing people, and what types of benefits and all that. So, and there are benchmarks to show what other smaller employers are doing to kind of help get you up and running quickly with that.
That is very interesting. Well, Peggy, I remember helping one of the startup organizations during my MBA internship program, and which is really fun. They have they know what are some structures that have to be done in their HR department, but they have fear in terms of getting that communicated to their executive team and getting their buying for making this approval, so that they can do some strategic HR goals. So what are your takes to those HR practitioners in communicating this message exactly to their executive team and to get their buy-in?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that is a perennial challenge for HR professionals. And I think that harkens back to what you were saying about the skills that HR professionals need, is this, the ability to communicate and get buy-in of the senior management team, CEO or CFO or whoever the appropriate person is. And I think the key things that HR needs to be able to do in order to get that buy-in is, in a very efficient way, make the business case. So whether it's the cost of noncompliance, whether it's the efficiencies, you know, what's the bottom line improvement? If it's squishy and just sounds like it's a good idea, that's not necessarily going to get the buy-in. But if there's a lot, if you can back it up with the data, and there's data out there, publishers like us, SHRM has it, there's a lot of information out there to kind of back up a case for why is it important to have, and that's why we do this kind of benchmark survey. It helps empower HR professionals with this type of information. You know, we can show if you spend more money, you know, we can be more efficient and ultimately save money if we invest now on X, or if we've got that focus and priorities and achieve, you know, whatever the priority. It has to be specific to your particular workplace, because every workplace has its own culture, its own strategies, its own priorities, and the HR person needs to really look at what they need and make sure that it aligns with the company strategy and priorities, and make that business case for why is that important and how is it going to help drive that overall business strategy and objectives.
Awesome. You know, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about content, because you've been in the content game for quite a while now. Yeah. And I know that sometimes it's like levers. You put something out, you know it's going to get a lot of traction, or you put something out, it's complete abject failure, it didn't work out like you thought it would. So as you look backward at last year, you know, what got consumption, what got usage, what got a bunch of shares and likes and things like that, that maybe it's the unintended stuff. Like you put something out there going, pretty benign, and all of a sudden you wake up and 3,000 people shared it or some crazy thing like that.
Yeah. I have to say the one that floated to the top for me was the LGBT report. We basically published a report on the top 10 states for LGBT employment. And as you can imagine, not only is that of interest to HR professionals, but it's more broadly interest outside the HR community. And while we related it to sort of legal protections, but we also looked at other reports about, you know, some employers had as a strategy to be an employer of choice. And so we factored in some of that as well. And it was just wildly popular. It's still available for download on our site. And we got a lot of really positive feedback, and Huffington Post picked it up, and there was a lot of comments there, and it was quite exciting. I mean, some of what we cover can be a little, well, outside the HR community might sound dry, but is really can be quite interesting, but it's a little bit more specialized in some cases. But that one in particular was went pretty viral and got a lot of feedback and interest from a lot of different communities, media communities and newspapers and professional organizations and states and individual companies and individuals. That was quite exciting.
Awesome. Well, tell us a little bit. We've got about 2 minutes left. Give me some high levels for 2014. Is it a rinse and repeat of 2013? Are you going to try some new stuff? What's the year look like from a content perspective?
Oh, from a content perspective. Well, I think from a content perspective, things are going increasingly mobile. So making content as accessible on various mobile devices so people can look up their information on their phones or their tablets and have it be as geographically relevant as possible, depending on either where they work or where they're moving, you know, or traveling. And essentially, I think the other area is, and it's particularly of interest in HR, is, I mentioned it earlier, the overlap of different laws. I mean, for HR, any particular issue can call up, you know, 5 or 6 different laws that apply to it. And so tools that help HR professionals kind of figure out, okay, I have an employee who has this issue. What is everything that I need to consider around this particular issue, federal, state, and local? And to make sure that I've considered all of the factors, because a lot of HR people, they'll research it, but they rely on experience and each other. But I think having a really very targeted sort of wizards to help is in the not too distant future to help with those kinds of assessments. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, listen, 30 minutes flew by like I told you it would. You can tweet her at Peggy Carter Ward. Peggy, thank you, Margaret. Peggy, thank you very much for coming on the show. Everyone, thank you for listening today, letting us invade your ear holes. Everyone, have a wonderful afternoon and hopefully a wonderful January. Thanks again, Peggy.
Thanks so much.
All right.